This episode of the Reds Roundtable is brought to you by Standard Chartered.
I think it's safe to say that he has a low ego. I'm not sure he would say the same about me, by the way.
You know, this is about winning trophies and about making our supporters happy.
The energy from the fans poured into the bus.
I'm still in awe of what I saw that day.
Fans might argue this a little bit. I always want to have the ball. I want it to be intense. I want the fans to like what they see.
Anna, thank you for coming. Have a seat.
Yes.
Welcome along to the round table. It's nice to get you three together, taking it in.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big one today. I feel it in my bones.
We're going to try to work on what Jürgen left behind. But of course, I bring my own things to the table as well.
It's a club that's for the people. You only have to look at the history of the club to understand how special it is.
I will do everything within my interest and power to lead the team in the best possible way.
Luis Diaz! Yes! Get it! Eight points! Here we go! This is ridiculous! Liverpool showing such strength and resolve. Absolutely wild! Liverpool keep on winning! And they've done it! And now you've got it!
If you work at a club like Liverpool, you always have to aim for winning something. And the biggest trophy is the Premier League.
The best players, athletes in the world play in this league. So with all the players we've brought in this summer, they had to adapt to that intensity. And I see all of them making progress.
Some lovely moments there. I'm going to start with you because it was your voice there that we heard. I want to take you back to when you first got the job. What was the biggest main attraction for you to come to Liverpool Football Club?
Poor lot. The first time we sat together, we were also sitting in a round table because in my house there's a round table as well, which is also white.
Nice.
No, why are you joining a club like Liverpool? I think there are a lot of reasons for that, their history. First of all, second of all, the chance to win something, because this is what Liverpool has always done. And then the people you work with, so you have to get an idea who you start to work with, because no matter how nice the club is or if you can win any trophy, if you don't feel a good connection with the people you work with, is, I think, is really hard to join that club. Not the least important, of course, the quality of the team I inherited from Jürgen, which I thought was good enough to compete. And that's what we did last season. And in the end, even won something really special.
What's it like? Because it's quite a seismic change, isn't it, to change your manager. So what's that like for you, Billy, when your manager changes?
I think, probably maybe more so than really any other sport. I think the impact of the manager in football is so significant. I think in our case, you know, obviously the Jürgen leaving and then in a sense creating almost an entirely new football operations department and coaching staff coming in is almost a bigger change. You know, sometimes it's just the manager that goes, sometimes it's the manager and his staff. In this case, it was almost a wholesale change on the football side. It allowed, you know, Richard, when he joined, to then have an opportunity with the team to go out and find the best person. We had a level of sustainability and longevity in Jürgen's tenure, and he inherited a great squad, but, you know, he came in and was himself. He wasn't trying to be, you know, whoever the people were that he was following. And I think that was, you know, one of the things that I first was impressed by him is his level of excitement coming to the squad and the squad that he was inheriting, but also his, you know, his willingness to take on what are big shoes to fill and then to carry on in his own way. The other piece that, you know, isn't necessarily talked a lot about, but in this case, given the fact that our partner Standard Chartered is, you know, how the football side and the business side and how they, the commercial side and how they work together. And I think, you know, one of the great credits to the two gentlemen to my right is that there's a, you know, great relationship across the senior level of the club and a real understanding of what the important things are that are helping us all move forward as a club. So, it was certainly an impact, but I think, managed in an incredibly seamless transition.
Would you tell me about that relationship? Because arguably before, where we sort of summer of 2024, you guys hadn't sat around a table, had you?
No.
Never even met, maybe. So how's that relationship developed? How does it work?
Well, it developed hugely. I mean, I knew Billy and I'd sort of sat around a form of table in a boardroom here and there, hadn't we, before. Yeah. I personally knew a lot about Arne's football from long before we actually met, which clearly helped with the first encounter at your place.
So he signed a few players from Feyenoord from my former club.
So okay. That's right. You'd had a connection.
There was a connection there. Yeah. I mean, without Arne knowing it. So in my previous role at Bournemouth, the scouting department found themselves drawn to Feyenoord players a lot. And it got to about the fourth player that got put in front of me, where I said, this is probably more to do with someone coaching the players rather than the players themselves, with the greatest of respect to them. And we ended up signing one of them, Marco Senesi, and later on, Luis Sinisterra, who went to Leeds. So I knew a lot about Arne's team, but from studying the individuals within it. Mm. And then when clearly this role came up, independently of that, there was a lot of work that was done from a data perspective, information compiling from lots of people. So I had a huge dossier armed with to sort of learn more about Arne before I met him. But straight away, everything that I read about him, everything that that I thought I saw from his teams was apparent and obvious in a first encounter. But it was synergy right from the first minute.
We got to a game, and it was against Tottenham, wasn't it, that you actually won the league. I mean, when did it sink in what you'd achieved in such a short space of a time?
Oh, sometimes I wonder if it's already synced in yet, because our lives are so fast. I think the most beautiful part of that day was driving in with the bus. That was even then I and everyone knew who were sitting in that bus. We're 100% going to win this game. The energy from the fans just poured into the bus, and I think you could feel that also during the game. That was one of the best memories I have, driving in with the bus. So impressive.
Yeah.
That was so impressive. It's not only ownership is there, family comes over, friends come over, they all come for a party.
Yeah. Right.
And you know, I know, the players knew, okay, but we still have to perform and we have to achieve what everybody's expecting. I experienced the same at Feyenoord, where everybody expected us to win the league on a certain day as well. And the last thing you should tell me is you've already won it, or things are already done, or I believe in the fact that don't talk about it as long as it doesn't happen. And then some people in your surroundings do understand that, and when they want to talk about things, what do we wear, all these kind of things, if there is a party afterwards, don't include me in that conversation. Because you do feel the responsibility that things still need to happen.
Obviously, what happened next didn't give you any time to celebrate, because the club was rocked by the death of Diogo Jota, which was just appalling and tragic. In terms of what happened then, I just wanted to talk about what was the support network, firstly and foremost and most importantly, for Diogo Jota's family, and how that worked for you.
Now, I think the fans and everyone around the club showed how special of a club this is when we won the league. But I can see other clubs being special when they win something as well. But when a tragedy like that happens, I think you can truly experience what kind of club you're working, what kind of people you're working with. And I think at that moment of time, our fans, but our players and everyone around the club, including ownership, has shown himself from his best possible side. So it was incredible, the support there was. Out in the open with the amount of flowers that were laid down and all these kind of things, but also the support from everyone towards Jot's family. But it said a lot about this special club as well.
Yeah, it does. But how do you deal with it on a sort of daily basis? Because obviously grief doesn't just happen, you know, it's not regimented. It happens all the time at different stages for different players, for different members of staff. How do you deal with that going forward every day?
For us, it was really hard, but for his wife, children, and his parents, it's you can't imagine how hard it must have been for them, because every single moment of the day, they feel it. And I've done a lot of meetings in my life, but the most difficult one was the one after we came back together, after the funeral. You know, we came back to Liverpool and we had to do our first training session with all the new players coming in. And I had to stand in front of the group and say something about, we are going to train again. How are we going to handle this situation? And to find the right words in a meeting like that is much more complicated than trying to prepare them for a game of football. But again, I wasn't on my own. I got a lot of help from Richard, from Billy, from all other people inside the club, or my staff members, to hopefully find the right words. But if you're in the dressing room last night, you still see one place that's empty, where he should have been.
lovely words there from you, and I'm sure that his wife and his children take a lot of solace from what the club really did for her in that time.
I am proud and humble. We have a lot of work to do. Can't tell you how happy I am. Finally got to this point. Our actions will speak for us. We're here to win.
The captain of Liverpool Football Club has his hands on the Carling Cup.
It's a special club and perfect next step for me to be now here and try to help. I feel really proud.
Dust off the crown. Liverpool Football Club are once again the kings of European football.
Premier League champions once again.
Clubs like Feyenoord and Liverpool, from what I saw, it just means a bit more for the fans. And I will do everything within my interest and power to lead the team in the best possible way.
Liverpool are the champions for their people, with their people, and for the 20th time.
We're here to win, he said. That's exactly what he did. What was it like when you first met John Henry? What was the experience like? Can you remember it?
It's a long time ago, 2004. I've worked for FSG since then. So they were in the midst of trying to end an 86-year curse, the curse of the Bambino with the Red Sox. And actually that year they ended up winning the World Series. So bringing to an end a long drought in Boston. So I was privileged enough early on to get that taste of winning. One of the things that has been a staple of FSG's has been, you know, the vision, but also, you know, strategic thinking. And ultimately, as sort of the guy responsible for the business side here at the club, to run it as sustainably as possible. And yeah, I think one of the things that John and Tom Werner, our chairman, Mike Gordon, our president, have always been put a massive amount of emphasis on is we're here to win, but we're here to try and do it sustainably and responsibly.
Yeah, talk us about when you arrived, because it wasn't in the best financial position, was it at all?
No.
So what was your kind of first objective?
I think it was weeks from administration, actually.
Wow.
In fact, I don't think that. I know that.
Gosh.
But yeah, I think ultimately what happens on the pitch kind of drives everything. So football is always going to be the critical element of that. And there was obviously a significant amount of turnover that was needed. Kenny came in to help kind of right the ship to some degree, and we won a trophy, which was terrific early on. But really rebuilding that squad on the football side was always sort of priority number one. I mentioned the infrastructure. You know, when we came for one of our due diligence trips, we were given a tour of Anfield, and you know, the real mindset around the infrastructure and the investment around Anfield was, you know, can we find a way to modernize the building and create a better fan experience and stay in both the literal and spiritual home of the football club? So we were able to do that, and that's something we're incredibly proud of. And then the last sort of leg of the stool, if you will, was sort of the commercial side, and could we really grow the commercial profile of the club to help, you know, coming back to that sustainable point to then help invest back into the football side. And ultimately, you know, we sort of talk about the virtuous circle of footballing success and commercial success, and those two sort of feeding each other. You know, 15 years later, we're still working on it. But it's been, you know, we've had some great successes over the years, and hopefully many more ahead.
Richard, what's it like for you? Because obviously you've had experience at other clubs as well, particularly Bournemouth. You know, would you have kind of the differences between working there and perhaps working with FSG then?
I always thought when we were in the Premier League at Bournemouth and you were at Premier League meetings or you came to away games, that Liverpool had something special about it. Just from an organisation, obviously from a club perspective, the fans, everyone's known that for decades. Mm. But just from how they did things, they were often the smartest people in the room. In meetings, you could genuinely tell that they would try to do things in a shrewd way, much to how ownership would have wanted to run their organisations. But I guess the magnitude of the club, that how big it is, how much it means to so many people, is something that will probably never surprise you, even if you experience it. So Arne and I had heard about what a parade would look like when finally people were able to talk to you about things that you weren't superstitious about, and the league title was secured, then of course planning the parade, people had said it, and we're quite calm people, we're quite, you know, impressed by a lot, I think it's fair to say, and but everyone said, wait till you see this is, you haven't seen anything like it. And it's fair to say that it was, I'm still in awe of what I saw that day when we were going around in that parade and just looking at other people experiencing this for the first time in some cases. I don't think we ever were, but if ever you're in any doubt how big a club this is, that was gone forever after you see those scenes.
In the short term, how's your relationship developed, Arne?
We have spoken now almost on a daily basis, I think, since we started, so you get to know each other even better. What I really like about working for a sports director, that whenever I need him, he's there for me, but you don't constantly feel that all the decisions you're making, he's judging them. Maybe he does, but then he finds a really good way of hiding that. because
it's not the case.
You want to have the backup if needed, or advice or whatever is needed, but you don't want two eyes on top of you constantly in every decision you make. And I think that balance, Richard finds that balance really good for me to work in ideal circumstances.
Do you feel the same, Richard? Do you feel, and is that an active thing that you do, that not sort of two eyes?
Fundamentally, there's the understanding for both parties and everyone at Wide that everything that involves match day, team selection, tactics, that's always the manager or head coach, call them what you want, that's their domain. And I think it's very important not to spill into that, unless, of course, we talk about football and of course we talk about performances, but I always let Arne lead that. So I don't feel that naturally within a conversation, I will come up with an opinion, not just react to Arne's, but I think always waiting for the right time to share these things is critical. And fundamentally, you have to have an opinion. There was an opinion that got Arne into the position that he's in, and so you can't shy away from that. But once you got the right person and you believe in that person, the judgment is not something that's happening, definitely not on a daily basis. You're working together to achieve something together. And did it help that we came in at the same time? Possibly, probably. I think it's more important, though, that we had synergy right from the first moment. So understanding who he is as a football manager, how he wants to work, trying your best, and it's not always possible to put them in the best possible position to have all the tools they require. And that's what I feel that my job is then. It's not just a supportive role where you're just absorbing communication. You're then, okay, what can we do about it? How does it fit into the club ethos and more at Wide? And then try to just genuinely put this man in as good a position as possible to do what he's done since he started being a head coach.
There's much more to come from this team than we've showed in the first half of the season. Although once in a while or during spells of games, we did show our the face that we can show, we should show even more and more and more. I've worked with sports directors that are very keen on the ones they've signed. And I think that is something that stands out with Richard and what makes him special, that he's not only focused on the ones he signed, he's just there for Liverpool to win and not for his signings to do well. And that is something you don't always see with sports directors. I think it's safe to say that he has a low ego, and I'm not sure if you would say the same about me, by the way.
But would you? I've got to ask the question now. Has he got a low ego?
But that is, yeah, I think that's obvious to everyone, yeah. I think there's great humility about Arne, and great communicator as well. And I think, again, I talked about the media and the press, which come into a country which is, you know, constantly having to do interviews, a lot more interviews than perhaps training sessions at times, it feels.
True.
So that communication that Arne's had, that humility, I think you can't kid it when you're coming across that many times. Absolutely low ego, really high work ethic and drive and motivation, which very much fits into the club ethos,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah. The most time where I think about football is how can I find a way to bring more energy in you or bring more energy in the team. It's a constant thought of what am I going to say tomorrow to get them going again. And sometimes I need to be hard on them, sometimes I have to give them compliments. That is what I think where my thoughts are 99% of the time.
Where there's time, there's hope for this Liverpool side.
It's all about what you have in your head. How can I bring that information to the players that they truly understand what I want from them?
Cross line sets it in, Van Dijk! They just find a way. Nketiah drifting through, Florian Wirtz!
mentioned something earlier about, you know, difficult times and making good speeches almost to your players, you know, what do you say to them? I'm just interested, because you heard there, you know, what do you say tomorrow? So it's always in your mind. Yeah. What do you do? What's the process for ensuring that the players are ready to go again and again? How do you do that?
Listen to people around you, like Richard. What is his opinion about how did he experience the game? Listen to your staff members, listen to your players. When they come in, looking in their eyes, experiencing how they feel. And we've had quite a few setbacks this season. Moments where we thought we were getting a push, so 2-0 up against Leeds United, then 2-2, making the 3-2, and you're feeling, ah, now is the moment for us to get, and then conceding the 3-3. And in these moments, you need to try to come up with things again to inspire them to keep going. And I think that's even more difficult, how weird this may sound, after you won the league, because, yeah, the only thing you want again is winning the league, and you're not happy with competing for the second, third, or fourth position. But still, there's a lot to play for, and that is, of course, what is very important. We can still win, but I believe in the fact that we have to win a game either by quality or by intensity. Now, the difficult thing for us is that this season, but maybe even the second part of last season, winning a game on the base of intensity gets harder and harder, for the simple reason that the other team tries to do everything to have as less intensity in the game as possible. And I can also completely understand why teams that play us don't want an intense game. We have to find a way, and we're working on it really hard, to get more intensity into games. And that is sometimes difficult because you cannot always control it. But for us to keep this league interesting, I think that's important. I can completely understand that the other team uses these tactics against teams like us. But the question is that the right thing for the Premier League to be the brand they want to be? But maybe I talk in my own interest a little bit now.
Yeah, I mean, some managers are quite intense, dare I say it. I don't feel you are. You don't come across as being very intense. I feel you're very calm and collected. Is that how you relay your messages across? Are you calm, or do you use a lot of emotion as well?
I think in general I'm quite calm, but okay. I can be someone else as well. But I think you have to be yourself.
Have you used it? Can you give us an example?
Southampton at home last season at halftime was definitely a moment where I wasn't happy with our performance. But that happened maybe a few times more. But I don't believe in the fact if you're constantly standing in front of them screaming, then in my opinion, that doesn't work. But it's not to say that if you are calm, your team cannot play intense. And I think this team last season and even this team are showing that they can play really intense with a manager being calm at the sideline.
Yeah, yeah.
But if the game could be more intense with me running up and down, I do have to work out a little bit, then I have to be honest about that. But then I would take that straight away. But I think it's not about how much you do. Although I've already been suspended twice, I think.
You're on a yellow card as well.
And one yellow card away from another suspension. Yeah. So
it was one of the many things that we liked. We loved Devaney when we watched him at Feyenoord. And one of the things we watched was sort of dugout behaviour, if you like. Yeah. His Feyenoord team played with such intensity on the front foot. And Arne cut this very sort of calm figure. But you can see when he celebrates a goal, there's huge emotion there. And sometimes you can get the perfect concoction when you have a really emotional, passionate club, a team that wants to play front foot, aggressive, intense. But you have someone who's orchestrating that, being as calm as he is, to make tweaks like you did countless of times last season. Mm. The amount of times at halftime the game wasn't going perfectly, and then a tactical switch or two, and in the second half flowed like we wanted it to do. So I think that gave a perfect recipe that we had last season. All this emotion, this real desire to do well and to win, but you had to have a cool mind on the pitch side to make these decisions, and I thought he made countless of them.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever had?
I don't know if it's really an advice or no, but as a manager, you can win the league, you can win the Champions League, you can win an FA Cup or a League Cup, but the biggest thing you can win is that you can play the nicest football to watch. Although at this moment of time, fans might argue this a little bit, but it is so absolutely something that I am aiming for. I always want to have the ball. I want it to be intense. I want the fans to like what they see, and that is something I dislike the most. I would almost say even more than our results, even more than the league table, that not all of our fans or every single moment of the game see us as a joy to watch. And the hardest thing is I even understand, because I agree with them. Trophies is one thing, but being a team or a club or a manager that stands for something, that stands for good football, is, I think, in the long term, even worth more.
Liverpool are struggling to find their form consistently. They have work to do. Liverpool Football Club has a special aura in this competition. When they need something, they've had a knack over decades of finding it.
Now, can he find the finisher?
It's fair to say that you have had the challenges this season. You know, you're being very honest with us. But how do you sort of block out all the noise to achieve wins like that that we saw there against Real Madrid?
Now, what I mean with that is, I do want to know what media thinks or what some pundits think, because they can influence the players.
Yeah.
And then it's important to tell them the real story, because maybe I underestimate pundits, but I don't expect them to watch as many times the game back as I do. The first time you watch it, it's full of emotions. And when it's full of emotions, the score always tells you a lot about what the opinion of the game is. So if we have a very well-controlled performance with a lot of ball possession and we score two goals, then it's a very well-controlled performance. If we do the same in a 0-0, it's a boring performance. Then I have to tell the players and show the players that there's not so much difference between them, as there is not so much difference between last season and this season. At least that's my opinion. You cannot block the noise, but you do want to give them the right information, what is actually happening compared to what people say is happening. I think we've shown this season already so many times that we're a very good team. I think we had a really good summer, and it has shown this season against Arsenal. We've shown that we can compete against them, even in large parts be better than them. But when you're 14 points behind them, there must be a reason for it. And I think for me, these reasons are also obvious, but I can see the team getting better and better and better. At least we agree, and I think everybody in the club agrees, that of course there are certain things we can improve. And if we're able to do that, which will certainly happen because players are more adjusted to each other, to the Premier League, when all of them are fit, the future looks really bright for us. I'm not talking about 10 years in time, I'm talking about the near future of this club, because that's what we have shown against Madrid, which I just saw, against a lot of other teams. When all of them are fit, when all of them are adjusted, and then we are a force to reckon with.
Yeah, absolutely.
As Liverpool has always been.
So just talk us through the difference between sort of the relationship with a new player, perhaps, than with an established player, and how that relationship works.
So as Andy said, I think you have to make sure that you don't focus just on the new players. I think that is a team sport, and just because new people are coming in doesn't mean you can suddenly just like leave the players who've been here for a number of years, or even Federico Chiesa, who's been here only for 1 year. You constantly have to try and help people off the pitch in their adaptation. It's normal to expect that young people coming from another country would take time to adjust to the new surroundings, a different type of football than they may have been used to, different demands, different team, so much that is not necessarily alien to them, but definitely different. You want to be able to, again, be there to support them, but not suffocate them with it, because let them find their feet. All these players are here for a very good reason. They're top players. By the way, everyone played a part in them getting to the club, and we were all very happy with what we did in the summer. It's not just me. Whether they're good, bad and indifferent in terms of signings, there's no propriety felt in my position. It's a collective effort that helps these boys sort of translate the form for which they were brought to the club and be the best version of themselves. And as long as the players are the right ones in the first place, and we're absolutely convinced every time we bring someone in that they are, then the performances on the pitch will quickly follow.
Do you feel that as well, Arno?
Only because the established one you've worked with longer, so you know him better, so you know better which button to press maybe. But for the rest, there's no difference between an established player where you won the league with, or one that you haven't worked with before. I think my lineups also have shown that players that have won the league were not always guaranteed for a starting place. As the same goes for a player you sign, no matter for how much money you sign him, he should perform to play. But in both situations, you do have the patience. Billy spoke a bit about sustainability, was the word I think you used. When it comes to FSG, I think that's also what you can see in our signings. So the signings we make, we don't make them for 2 months or 3 months. We bring young players in where we think and feel they can impact it straight away, but we are 100% sure that they will impact Liverpool a lot, maybe after a period of adaptation.
In terms of the players you sign, how important is their personality?
It's key to me that the manager speaks to players at the right time in the process, because ultimately that's the synergy required. So I try to put the right people in front of the manager in order that I think will be compatible, not only in the football pitch, but also off it. So yeah, the same level of detail that went into the appointment of Arne goes into every single footballer. What is difficult or impossible to evaluate fully is how is that young person going to do at this club in this moment with these completely new surroundings and new teammates. So there's an element of trusting your judgment and seeing how it pans out, but definitely the detail that goes into it to start with is huge.
You know, it's to Arne's point around, and Richard, you know, this is a long-term strategic decisions in terms of, you know, the folks that we recruit. Forget about just on the team. That's, you know, coaching staff, backroom staff, our team on the commercial side. You know, we're trying to find the best people possible in their particular position to come and join the club and take it forward in a really meaningful way. And so this has been a challenging last several months, but I think there's an element of patience which is required, difficult in the world we live in.
Yeah, good to hear, actually, because patience doesn't seem to exist sometimes at football clubs.
But you asked, it's not only quality, and that's also what Richard, I think, said, but if I think about Liverpool, their most successful period in the last 5 to 10 years, then I think about Bobby Firmino, Sadio Mane and Mo Salah, because they've scored goal after goal after goal. But if I'm in the building and I'm talking about that period of time, I hear two other names constantly, and that's James Milner and Jordan Henderson. That's also things you're looking at, that you have the right mentality, people that know what the culture is. So maybe to the outside world, it's mainly about those three attackers who scored goal after goal after goal. But we are, and Richard as well, we are aware of the fact that it's not only the ones that make the difference maybe in individual quality, but to get a successful team, you need other qualities as well.
My final question, and you can all join in on this one, but I'm going to start with you, Billy. What's the club's plan, you know, for the next 5 to 10 years, and kind of like, what's the process between both commercial and executive teams when kind of planning for the future?
We talked about it a little bit earlier, the sort of journey that we've been on since 2010, over the last 15 years, you know, and it sounds maybe trite or simplistic to say to continue that journey. I mean, this is, you know, we fundamentally always felt that, you know, the term sleeping giant was used when FSG was looking at Liverpool in terms of this incredible potential that the club had, and it had obviously fallen on some difficult times. Our job and our focus has been on trying to return it to, you know, as we believe, its rightful place. That job is frankly never done. That's something that we're constantly working on. Improvements that we've made from an infrastructure standpoint, the continued investment in the squad, and the, you know, at the end of the day, as we heard from John in the clip, you know, this is about winning trophies and about making our supporters happy and proud of the team, and you know, we're going to continue to do that.
I think I said the same after we won the league, that I like the perspective of winning the league twice in 5 years, a bit more than twice in 30 years. I think we are all trying to aim for that, and I think we're in a very good place. Unfortunately, we're not the only team that's in a really good place. I think the Premier League has become stronger and stronger and stronger. Mm-hmm. But that makes it also more interesting and even nicer if you then in the end can win it.
In Billy's job, he can look 5, 10 years ahead like he's done before and projected along with ownership what ultimately we're reaping the benefits of. I think for Arne and I, it's a lot more sort of short term, and it's rare that you get Arne sort of looking too far ahead. And my role is somewhere in between there, right? And I think that it was obvious when we first came in that the best thing to do was evaluate what was a very talented squad, but then, you know, how are they going to transition into a sort of a new regime? Clearly very well was the answer last year, but then within a squad game, there are so many players whose game time perhaps is not where they want it to be, so then they have to look at other opportunities for them. So we knew that the first summer together, as soon as we'd come in, wasn't going to be a particularly active one. And alongside sort of ownership with their long-term vision, they like to do things with all the metrics and the data in our favour. And the best way to do that is to prepare 1 year ahead, so one summer window to the next. So we deliberately did not a lot in our first season when we come in, but knew that we could identify throughout the course of last year players that would come in and help the squad. The ages of the players we recruited, as the Kaiser said, is very deliberate to make sure that we're not only competitive now, but competitive for the mid-term future. And that's realistically, if all you can control, and you know that under this ownership, that it's going to, the long-term future is also going to be bright. But the main thing for Aaron and I is to make sure that on the pitch, short-term, mid-term, that people have a lot to look forward to. And I think that's very much the case here.
I'm sure it is. Thank you so much, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure to talk to you all. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vicky.
Thank you.